The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, progressive listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician, professor herbalist, and your host for today. Dr. Kamai has the week off. And you can always get in contact with us on our websites. My website is www.drznaturally, that's drznaturally.com. And Dr. Kamai is, of course, naturalnurse.com, all one word. Now, today we have a great guest. We have Dr. Claudia Welsh, and she's author of Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life. And she lectures and teaches internationally on Asian and Ayurvedic medicine. She's one of the unusual practitioners that she has training in both of these ancient systems, and we're going to be talking to her about her new book, Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life, Achieving Optimal Health and Wellness Through Ayurveda, Chinese Medicine, and Western Science. We're going to look at the balancing effects of sexual and stress hormones in the body and how Dr. Welsh feels that this is a huge, huge impact on our health for many, many conditions, and particularly women are the focus of today's discussion. And although maybe we'll touch base on men too, and she's going to give us a lot of strategies to combat many different problems like painful menses, mood swings, insomnia, fibroids, hot flashes, heart disease, osteoporosis, looking at both Western, Ayurvedic, and Chinese medicine. Dr. Welsh, pleased to meet you.
Very nice to meet you too, Dr. Z.
Yeah, I met your husband at an interesting naturopathic kind of conference, and we had a great conversation. And then I found out that you were a practitioner of Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, like your husband, Jim. And that's what prompted me to get in contact with you and have you on as a show. So I'm really excited that you wrote this book. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm, like you said, trained in both Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine. And just in case some of your listeners are not aware of what Ayurvedic medicine is, I just want to maybe say a couple of words about that. Most people are pretty familiar with Chinese medicine these days, with acupuncture and moxibustion and herbal medicine from a Chinese point of view. And that's Chinese medicine that's been practiced for thousands of years in China. And Ayurveda is simply the medicine form that's been practiced for thousands of years in India. So it is to India what Chinese medicine is to China. But we don't use acupuncture. We use herbs, and we use as well, you know, we use herbs the same way that Chinese medicine uses them, but different herbs,
right,
of course, because the landscape and environment is different. And we do use, there's certain points on the body called marma points, which are similar to acupuncture points, but we don't use needles. One kind of unique aspect of the medicine is our use of oil, both internally and externally, medicinally. So there's lots of beautiful oil treatments, warm oil being poured on the head, warm oil being poured on the body, and it feels as nice as it sounds, too. So there's so there's differences between the two systems, but there's similarities in that at the root we're looking at the root cause of disease as being lifestyle and diet, what we're doing every day that's causing us disorder.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, tell us a little bit about how we got into this situation. That's how you open up your book with chapter one, which is called The Stress Epidemic. How do we get into this situation? How to change course? What's the theory behind what stress does in both systems of medicine? Certainly you could also comment on Western system too. But why
yeah,
is,
well, you know, first we have to look at what is this situation. And from my point of view, it's just what I said. It's a stress epidemic. And I was just finding in my private practice, I had a busy private practice for years, and I was just finding that after I studied women's hormones for a long time from a Western point of view and worked out a way to look at hormones from using an Eastern point of view, I started seeing that almost everybody who was walking in the door may have had a different manifestation of a complaint, whether it was migraines during the cycle or heavy bleeding or hot flashes or infertility. There may have been different manifestations, but the root cause for everybody pretty much seemed to be the same, which was an overextension of resources, physical, spiritual, emotional resources, and a subsequent draining of those resources and of a woman's emotional and hormonal balance. And there's this old Chinese saying that the new practitioner has 100 different treatments for every patient who walks through the door, and that the old practitioner has one treatment for 100 patients who walk through the door. And I've definitely started to feel more like that second category, where oftentimes the same prescription is appropriate for 100 different people, and the prescription is to slow down and to stop as much as possible and to reevaluate our priorities. And so the situation is that we're overextending our resources, we're outspending our resources, we take in certain resources from food, from drink, from nourishing company, from spiritual sustenance, and when our output, when our activity level and throughout our days and weeks and months and years and decades is more than what we're bringing in, then we have to dip into reserves in our body. And when we do that, we really deplete ourselves. And so that's the situation. And how we got there is a really interesting question. I mean, why do we do what we do in our lives? You know, especially when we talk about women with this, and we look at what's been happening in women's lives and trends in the last decades. Somewhere in the 70s, we came up with women's liberation. And, you know, when I'm talking around the world and I'm talking about women's health and I bring that up, before I say anything else, there's a snicker and a giggle that run through the room because everybody's seeing, nobody's feeling liberation. Nobody's feeling liberated exactly, or to any degree. Not to say that it's not wonderful that women are able to pursue their interests and that there haven't been strides made for equality, but what's happening is that women are not only having families and putting food on the table and being a glue of families, but we're also going out and working full-time and trying to have hobbies and trying to educate ourselves, and it's just too much, and women just don't even know how to stop anymore.
And this kind of overdrive, one thing that you didn't mention is, like, I noticed that with the electronic age, you know, having to respond to emails and being texted at all hours of the day, there's no time to shut down. And so I know that's more pervasive since the 90s. Before, I remember, early 90s, there was no email, there was no computers. Late 80s, mid 80s, I remember typing my papers in medical school on typewriters.
Right, me too. And yeah. I lived in India for about 3 years in the 80s and early 90s.
Right.
And forget about even phones. There were no phones that I could use to call people in the States. And so I'd write a letter. 2 weeks later, it would get to the States. It'd take a little while for somebody to write a letter back. It'd get to me. There would be this six-week gap. It's really different. And the one thing that's happening with this electronic influence on our behaviors and physiology is that they're almost like we're wearing our nervous systems outside of our bodies and things are being externalized. And what I mean by that is that the internet specifically has this tremendous resonance with the nervous system. The nervous system works by an impulse going out, connecting to something, and coming back and relaying information. And that's exactly how the internet works. And so it's almost this perfect, seamless kind of extension of our nervous systems. And so our nervous systems are spreading out into the internet world, and that could be anywhere. And so the demand on our nervous systems is far more aggressive than it used to be. And this is a problem with hormone balance in the sense that when our nervous systems are hyper-stimulated, what we have a tendency to do is to perceive benign events as threatening. And when we see something as threatening, immediately cortisol and adrenaline, these stress hormones, are released in our systems and jack it up to a higher alert stage, because, you know, we evolved to do this. We're supposed to, our systems are supposed to prioritize survival. And if a bear were to jump out, we're supposed to be on high alert. There could be another bear, or the bear goes away but could come back. And so we stay hyper alert. And these days there's not a physical bear, but when our nervous systems are so hyped up and we become over responses to stimuli, and then that increases stress hormones, which makes us even more alert and stimulates our systems more, it becomes this catch-22. And what ends up happening, of course, is that our entire bodies, our organs, our tissues, our systems are being irrigated literally with stress hormones, and they have a pretty deleterious effect on the physiology.
So when in your book you talk about the translation of those Western stress hormones into the ancient systems. In Ayurveda, you know, it's based on the doshas, vata, pitta, kapha, and those types of things. In Chinese medicine, it's yin and yang, balancing of the various hormones. Talk about those systems and how they look. They looked at these things.
Yeah, it's a good question, Dr. Z. You know, the ancient texts, I've read a lot of the ancient texts from both Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, and in none of them have I ever found reference to hormones. They're simply not there. Even in Western medicine, the first hormone wasn't discovered until 109 years ago. So focusing this conversation on hormones has been a relatively recent event, you know, roughly 100 years. And so when I was first in practice, I was also teaching women's health in Chinese medicine school. And almost every woman that would come in to see me would reference things in terms of hormones, like, I think my hormones are out of whack, my cycles are out of whack, I'm not sure if I'm going into menopause because things are changing, I've got, you know, headaches around my period, and should I take a hormone replacement therapy, bioidentical therapy? And I didn't really know what to say, because these ancient Eastern systems don't talk about hormones. And so what I did was I researched hormones from a Western point of view a lot, and I talked to friends and so forth, and I never met a healthcare practitioner who admitted to fully understanding hormones. They're a really complicated subject, often overwhelming lists and information, and often conflicting. So I went through all of those lists that, you know, this hormone is made here and it goes to this part of the body and it has this effect, and that hormone is made here and it goes to this other part of the body and has this effect. And so I'd read all the lists and it just felt so overwhelming. But I kept at it, and little by little I started to see a pattern emerge. And this pattern is a fundamental pattern that's described in both Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. In Chinese medicine, there's a way of looking at the world and describing the world through a point of view of duality. And like you mentioned, that the term for that is yin, and the terms for that are yin and yang. And in Ayurveda, even though most students of Ayurveda, beginning students, talk about Ayurveda in terms of three forces in the body called Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Vata, Pitta, and Kapha don't, in my opinion, describe hormone function in the body very elegantly. But there's another idea in Ayurvedic medicine, fundamental principle, and that is exactly synonymous with the yin and yang principles of Chinese medicine, and they're called Brahmana and Lungana, and they have synonyms called Santarpana and Apatarpana. But for ease of pronunciation and clarity, you might as well just term them yin and yang, because it's exactly the same idea. And that idea is that there's that everything in the world can be described in relative terms, and these relative terms at their extremes are yin and yang. And yin is a constellation of qualities that are combined, and these qualities are heavy and nourishing and grounding and cool and soft and ultimately very archetypally feminine. And yang is the other extreme. It's high, it's light and dry and hot and more masculine associated attributes like ambition and drive and stimulation and motivation. And so while these ancient traditions didn't describe hormones per se, they gave us a lens through which we can understand all these lists of hormones. They gave us the context in which to understand these hormones. And what we see then is a fairly clear picture that you don't have to manipulate too much to make it work. In fact, you don't have to manipulate it at all. It works really well, where you see that the stress hormones in a man or a woman's body are very yang in nature. They're motivating and stimulating and quickening to the system. Mm. And a woman's sex hormones are very building and nourishing and grounding. And as long as those two forces are fairly equal, then that's fairly good balance in the body. I mean, when we think about it, every single cell in the body needs both of those factors, something that stimulates and motivates and transforms, and substance that provides grounding and nourishment. And it's like that throughout the body. And so as long as those forces, the grounding, nourishing, building forces, and the stimulating, motivating forces are balanced, then we're in good shape. But when one or the other become increased or poor quality, then we get in trouble. And when we live entire lives full of drive and ambition and stress, then it's very difficult, if not impossible, to maintain a balance. And especially when women's sex hormone levels start naturally decreasing, which is at 35. Mm-hmm. At 35, naturally, and just a natural healthy process in a woman's life is that her sex hormones start decreasing at 55. And then, of course, at menopause, whether it's surgical or natural, it's the sex hormones drop considerably. So what happens is, if our lives are still extremely stressful when we hit 35, and especially when we hit menopause, and we have less buffer against that with the nourishing, balancing effect of the nourishing, grounding hormones, then we get into a state where our systems are overstimulated, overmotivated, overlight, which we can see in the form of osteoporosis and women's type heart disease and so forth. And we start really seeing effects that we weren't seeing earlier in our years when we had the increased levels of those buffering hormones.
And I know you use, in your book, you talk about the three pillars of health to bring yourself back into balance. I guess people, you know, I know there's an old Chinese saying, it's the foolish man who waits to dig a well, or I guess women in this case, when they are already dying of thirst.
Right.
So I guess your goal, and that's the whole goal of these ancient systems, was it was based on building health, not really treating disease. So maybe
absolutely. I mean, you know, often, and I'm sure you have this in your practice and life where, you know, people come and they say, oh, how do I lose weight, or how do I gain weight, or how do I sleep? And there's many things where this approach fits, but I think especially with weight and sleep, you never want to treat those directly. You want to treat the context. You want to treat the you want to get healthy and have a healthy lifestyle in place early. And that's very true for menopausal symptoms too. You don't want to treat the hot flashes. You want to treat the life. You want to treat the context, because what we find is that the hormones are driven by the context of our lives. There was a study that I quote in the book, and it's I love this study. It's the organizers of the study took two groups of students, one that was quintessentially Eastern, and I can't remember what country they were from, maybe Taiwan, the other that were quintessentially Western, and they were both shown the same clip, and it was this animated feature clip of just short clip of a seascape, and in the seascape there was stuff in the background. I don't know what it was, a treasure chest, an octopus, some seaweed, whatever. And then there was what they called a focal fish, which was in some way bigger, faster, brighter than the other fish and the other scene, the other props in the scene. And then both groups of students were asked the same list of questions about what they had just seen. And all of the Western students could describe that quote-unquote focal fish in great detail, but almost nobody could say anything about what the context was, whereas the Easterners, the Eastern mind, they could describe the focal fish, but not in quite as much detail, but they could give a lot of detail about what was going on in the context of that film. And this is what we see in Western versus Eastern medicine a lot, where Western medicine will give you the focal fish. It'll describe, for example, if we apply this to hormones, this is estrogen, this is what it does, this is where it comes from, blah, 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 about estrogen. And it will do the same thing with progesterone and cortisol and so forth. But it tells you almost nothing about how these interact with each other and how your context, the context in which you live, how that drives that interaction. And whereas what we find when we step back and look at the context, which is much more what we do in Eastern medicine, we see that when a woman's life is stressful and she is living under certain preconceptions of what's important and really burning herself out to achieve those milestones or objectives or goals, and when that's her context, she's going to be creating more stress in her lives, and those stress hormones are going to come up. And we don't want to then look and say, oh, well, how can we reduce cortisol levels? We want to say, how can we balance our life so that cortisol levels are not skyrocketing.
And that's what you teach. I know in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, but particularly in Ayurveda even more, they seem to teach rituals about how to live, like wake up and have a gratitude list, then do some yoga, practice some meditation, do abhyanga, which I like to talk about, the oil massage, spend some time in nature looking at a pond or scullery maid. I get up in the morning and get the fire going. I watch
That's
the fire.
So funny you should say scullery maid. I'm in Vermont right now, and I have a friend who's really hands-on young father of a young child, and he's got these friends who come to visit, and every time they would come to visit him, he would be doing dishes at the sink. So they recently got him a T-shirt that says "Scullery Maid" on it.
Funny?
He's really proud of it.
But
it's true. It's true, Dr. Z. It's one of the real strengths of Ayurveda is that it does look at context, and in my opinion, above all else. You do have herbs, and you do have remedies and things like that, but what Ayurveda really looks at is, how are you living your life? What kind of exercise are you doing? What kind of thoughts are you thinking? What are your relationships with people like? What food are you eating? Wake up, and how are you greeting the day? And this certainly can get lost when Ayurvedic practitioners get quote-unquote more advanced and they know more about herbs and more about other special remedies, and they get kind of attached to those remedies to apply to the problem rather than looking at the person's life and seeing what is going on in your life. And
supplements are supplemental.
Exactly.
You know, they don't take the place of doing, you know, exercise and meditation. And I think that's a very interesting point, because I know lots of naturopathic students that are doing the same thing, burning the, you know, to get through a rigorous program, you're yourself, to get your doctorate and master's in different educations, it's pretty tough. And that's not including, you know, raising a family, having kids, paying back your loans when you're graduating, trying to get your practice set up, worrying about all the issues that we already talked about and covered. But I like the fact that as an Ayurvedic practitioner, you could actually look at someone's constitution, so you know the person that has the disease versus the diseases the patient has, kind of like what you alluded to before, and set them straight and give them a routine to follow.
It's really true. And in fact, you know, I've been considering over the last year this issue of context versus focal fish kind of thing. Like, and I have to say, if a patient came in front of me and I was given a choice and said, you can either be told all the symptoms that this person is having, or you can be told what their lifestyle is like and what their context is, and I could only pick one or the other, and that was the weird game that was going on, I think I'd have to pick context, because the context drives the symptoms. And I've found over the years that it's more and more important. And it's so funny. For years I've been teaching all different level students in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, from beginning to advanced, and there's always this idea, even though, you know, you'd think that people drawn to Eastern medicine would understand this context-driven thing, but there's sort of this internal judge that has grown up in this Western culture that says, no, that the lifestyle can't possibly be as important as the secret herbs and remedies. And there's this, I recently had someone who's become a friend who was a student years ago, and she's now an advanced practitioner herself, and she said to me recently, she said, I remember those first days in class when you would say the special remedies and the herbs and the powdered gemstones and the this and the that are not the secrets of health. Those are not the ancient secrets. The secrets of health are in the basics. And she said, I used to just kind of not hear that. I would think, yeah, that you must just be saying that. And she said, now I get it. Now, after having studied all that stuff and started to work with patients, I get it. But it takes years of watching what people are doing and exhausting the realm of different remedies and seeing that they do work, but they don't turn it around, because you take something and you don't change your life, then you're going to have to take that thing forever.
Yeah.
Whereas if you change your life, you may not have to take that thing longer than another week.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting. In the chapter, Changing Lifestyles, Changing Lives, I love this saying by Rumi, if all you can do is crawl, start crawling. If you have 100 cynical fantasies about God, make it 99. If you can't pray a real prayer, pray hypocritically, full of doubt, dry mouth. God accepts counterfeit money as though it were real. So fake it until you make it. So give us some strategies, some do's that people have to do. You know, of course, women. First of all, what are the three pillars of health? And then let's give some concrete examples of some do's and don'ts, which will bring people back into balance.
All right. Yeah. So the three pillars of health, I mean, it's slightly arbitrary, because two of them are kind of subsets of one, which is lifestyle. Lifestyle is made up of everything you do and eat. So there's what your lifestyle is one, and what your diet is another, and stress management is the third.
Oh, you know what? Hold on for a sec, Dr. Claudia. I hear the music, which means actually it's time to take a break, mid-show break, and we'll pick that up. That's actually a nice point to start with the three pillars of health and what we can do to keep our bodies back in balance. When we return on the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z Show, stay tuned.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Why should you be listening to the Progressive Radio Network? Here are a few hosts that call PRN home. Award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker Michael Rupert. Acclaimed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. Notable media critic and international journalist, the news dissector, Danny Schechter. Leading progressive journalists such as Stephen Ledman, John Rappaport, and Glenn Ford have also found a home with us. We also have advice from Richard Martin on how to protect yourself from the ongoing financial collapse. John Mueller tells us his firsthand account on moving out of the U.S. and making a new life for himself in another country on his show, The Expat Files. Along with all these informative programs, we also have health shows hosted by America's top doctors like Mayor Eisenstein, Cheryl Selman, and, of course, Gary Null. The Progressive Radio Network is the place for news and information.
Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, I'll be revealing secrets, deceptions, and hoaxes of the medical cartel. I've been covering this waterfront for 30 years as a reporter, and I know where the bodies are buried. With guests and commentary, I'll rip open the lid on vaccines, psychiatric drugs, the FDA, pharmaceutical companies, germ research, and media cover-ups. Don't check your brain at the door. Tune it up. Every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on PRN, The John Rappaport Show.
Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. We're proud to announce that the Progressive Radio Network will be bringing you our live call-in talk show, Prescriptions for Health, every Monday afternoon starting June the 6th from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Mark your calendars and save up your questions so you can ask us about possible strategies for your health problems, whether mainstream or complementary and alternative.
We also invite your questions and comments about any area of health care, including politics, economics, ethics, philosophy, and styles of healthcare.
So remember to tune in every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to the Progressive Radio Network's Prescriptions for Health show.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And we're back with more of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And this is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, naturopathic doctor and practitioner of Chinese medicine. And we have with us the author of Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life, Achieving Optimal Health Wellness Through Ayurveda, Chinese Medicine, and Western Science, Dr. Claudia Welsh. And before we took that break, Dr. Welsh, we were going to talk about practical things that people can do, take home in the last 20 or so minutes of the show. What are something that what can we do? I mean, we have all these demands on us. Many times back in the old days, people could work one job and basically, you know, support their household. Now people can hardly do it with two.
Right.
We have the internet, we have worries, we have the world falling apart, so we hear if we listen to the media, and it's just like we're bombarded with things. What am I going to do now? I'll give you a patient case. So I have a lady that came in, and She was very tense, of course, and her nature is very thin to begin with. She's very vata. But she's complaining of a lot of muscle aches and pains. And she says that over the past years of worrying and things like that with her family and working, her husband being out of work and things like that, she's developed lots of trigger points in the muscles. The muscles have actually become sinewy and almost kind of dry and tight to the point where she seems like she's contracting almost, she says. Her muscles feel like they're in cement and she's contracting. She eats pretty well. But nonetheless, she's very, and she takes lots of interesting supplements, that's for sure, but she seems not to be able to turn the corner with her health because she's not really addressing the lifestyle issue, which is getting up really early, working double shifts. You know, she's a nurse, and she's got to do this, that, and the other thing to support the family. So with that in mind, what type of advice would you say for a person whose life is out of balance like that?
Right, and we see this just over and over, and you know, and it's ironic too that she's a nurse and she's
exactly
a
taking care of
others,
but not themselves.
Yeah, and we see it. We see it just right down the line. I mean, there seems to be no dividing line between this. Well, there's a couple of things that we could say for your patient that will apply to a lot of people, and then I'll tell you a story about a patient of mine to kind of. Contextualize this again, but one we recognize that she's under stress, and one thing that happens when we're under stress is cortisol is a stress hormone that's released when we feel stressed out and when we have a trigger, whether it's real or perceived danger, and if we perceive something as danger then or stressful, then we trigger the release of cortisol. And one of my favorite new ways of looking at cortisol is that it's, rather than thinking of it as a hormone that pops up here or there, or this little substance that pops up here or there, I think of it more as an organizer of a director of where our resources go. So, you know, if a bear jumps out at you, cortisol rises. What happens is your energy and your blood get robbed from your vital organs, your digestive organs, your heart, your liver, your reproductive organs, and shunted to the big muscle groups in your body, the biceps and the quads, and so that they're ready to fight or flight. And so we've got this extra energy moving to those muscle masses, but it's not really being used. We're not running and we're not fighting. We're just hanging out. And so it creates this stagnation kind of thing in the extremities. And when in Chinese medicine, as you're I'm sure well aware, there's no pain without stagnation. So if she's having pain in her extremities, that means there's some kind of stagnation there. And I would expect that it's possible that this over a long time of cortisol shunting energy to the extremities, but those extremities not actually using that energy the way it was initially designed by evolution to be used, it ends up stagnating and there's pain. So that's one possible thing with her, and another possible thing is that the stress in her life is not allowing her to absorb and digest the good food and the supplements that she's taking. And so,
yeah, that's interesting. You look at her tongue, and it's kind of pale, and she has deficiency of absorption, not because of lack of trying. It's just that her body doesn't want to assimilate the
food.
Stuff.
We can be eating absolutely the perfect food for ourselves, but it won't get where it needs to go if we're under stress. Mm. You cannot... She could see 20 different wonderful doctors who all agree what she should be eating, and she's still not going to digest it if she's under siege. Mm. It just doesn't happen. You know, a bear jumps out of the wood, all that energy is getting shunted away from the digestive system. I have people complain to me that their libido is low, and they've got 3 kids under 10, and they're working a full-time job, and they think something's wrong with them. It's like, oh, my God, please just lie on the couch, you know? Lie on the couch for a while. You need to rest. But you mentioned earlier Abhyanga, which is the Ayurvedic word, the Sanskrit word for warm self oil massage.
Hmm.
And in one of the appendixes of Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life, I give an outline of how to do this warm oil massage for yourself. That would perhaps help your patient in a couple of ways. One is it will passively move the energy that's stuck in her extremities,
right.
and help move, you know, I mentioned if she's not digesting what she's eating, that poorly digested crud, Ayurveda calls ama, gets circulated and lodges in the tissues, and can also, this warm oil massage can help move that out. And that's one thing in terms of a direct way it can help, but indirectly it can help tremendously for anybody who's undergoing a lot of stress because it calms the nervous system. You don't have to pay a lot of money. You're not going and having someone else give you a massage. You're doing a self-massage every day as much in so far as possible with warm oil, preferably herbalized,
right.
And you're giving yourself a little self-care, and that warm oil has this really calming effect on the nervous system, which helps break that catch-22 cycle that we talked about earlier. When the nervous system is jacked up, you become hypersensitive, and stress hormones are released, and then you become more hypersensitive, et cetera, et cetera. So this helps break that cycle. And to contextualize that a little bit and broaden this to be more practical for more women, I want to give an example of a patient of mine who's given me permission to tell her story. And she when I first started working with her, she was in her late 30s or early 40s, and now she's in her early 50s. And she just came. She wanted to understand a good lifestyle and diet for her constitution and what was going on with her. She got that down, started doing more yoga, gentle yoga, not jump around, you know, kind of sweat it out yoga. It's a little counterproductive sometimes, but she started doing an appropriate yoga for herself, an appropriate routine. And then as she got more into perimenopause, that wasn't quite enough, and so she started taking some herbs. And through all this time, I had been telling her, try Abhyanga, try the warm self-oil massage. And it just was a piece that she never seemed to be able to fit in. But then her partner said, hey, you know, why don't you try, because the herbs weren't working anymore, and she was starting to get hot flashes. And her partner said, hey, why don't you try doing this warm self-oil massage, this Abhyanga that Claudia is always telling you to do. And so she did, and immediately the hot flashes stopped and everything got better. And
wow.
Then she went through a divorce, and she had opened a yoga studio, and the economy crashed, and she was headlong into menopause, and all of that together wasn't enough. And I was across the country at the time, and she called me, and she said, I'm taking the herbs, I'm doing Abhyanga, I'm eating right, I'm doing the right amount of yoga, but the stress is through the roof, and I'm having these hot flashes and insomnia and mood swings. You know, what can I do? And I said, you know, the most important, the biggest gun that I know of is gentle, slow, alternate nostril breathing. Why don't you try doing that 15 minutes a day? So from that point, and that was some 3 or 4 years ago until I last talked with her, which was last fall, every day if she would do the 15 minutes of gentle, slow, alternate nostril breathing, she would be symptom-free for the rest of the day. And if she missed a day, they'd come back.
Mm.
So sometimes we're in these really stressful periods of our lives, and we're doing everything we know we need to do, and it's still not enough, and we can't seem to change our lives and slow them down and cut the stress out. During those times, it's hard to believe, but alternate nostril breathing, slow and gentle, is one of the most powerful tools that I know of.
I know you talk about that in your book. It's amazing treatment. It's actually better than, I mean, we talked about symptoms like going to sleep for people that have mind, you know, they always say the mind's like a drunken monkey, you know, the mind chatter, and they can't get to sleep, and they have hot flashes at night, and so you're balancing all that, and this has been just a powerful medicine. But people don't think breathing is medicine. I think that's what's so great about Yeah. Ayurveda and yoga. Breathing is medicine. I mean, we can't live more than 6 minutes without oxygen. We do it more than we eat. It has to be more important than herbs. This is the way I look at it.
It is. And, you know, there are these kind of layers of pretty secret stuff, you know, not secret because somebody's keeping it under lock and key, but secret because it just hasn't kind of gotten out there. These old texts that talk about two primary channels that deal with duality in the body, and the one connected with the right nostril, pingala, is connected to that stimulating, motivating yang aspect, and connected to the left nostril is a channel called ida, they talk about, and that's related to the nourishing, grounding aspect. And they're the two in some unwidely known, you can say, texts in India. They talk about these two channels as being the most important channels that are available to most of us to use to affect change in the mind, even, and as well as the body. So how they work, it's really kind of subtle and interesting and hard to believe. It's so powerful, but I don't know anything more powerful. And you even look at Western medicine, you know, when medics arrive on the scene, somebody's having an appendectomy or a health crisis, the first thing they do, they put the oxygen on and they say, slow your breathing down, start slowing your breathing down and take deep, long breaths. And they may not know why it works, even without the oxygen, even before they put the oxygen on, they'll counsel someone to take long, slow, deep breaths, and all the vital signs can often come back into balance, and we don't even know in Western medicine why that happens so much, but it does.
Also, you mentioned laughter. That's a very important medicine, too.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's, you know, everybody likes bullet points, you know, and a couple of times I've asked, you know, my editor or someone who's asked me to write something like, can one of the bullet points be change your life? And people say, no, that's not a bullet point. That's a little too much of a mouthful. But that's vitamin L, you know?
I like that. Oh, that's good, yeah.
But,
I know that there's a type of yoga where they just, you just laugh for no reason.
Right.
And then it's contagious. It's
crazy.
If that seems silly, then get some good movies, you know.
Yeah, it's true. You know, whether you like Steve Martin or Laurel and Hardy, you know, you just get to pick your medicine. It's a great one. And there's some really good bullet points for reducing cortisol. And one is meditation. One is deep breathing. One is laughter. One is exercise, but not the inner Jane Fonda that takes us over and says, jump around and make it burn, you know, something a little more moderate than that usually. And so, you know, even if we're doing half an hour brisk walk 3 or 4 times a week, that's good, you know, that's good for a lot of us. And so moderate exercise, because if you do too little or too much, you increase your cortisol, your stress levels.
All right, so exercise could be the wrong type of exercise. Is deleterious, perhaps. I mean, Americans just are generally suffering from exercise deficiency. So we as physicians often just want to prescribe MYOB, move your buns around, or MYBO. But nonetheless, in Ayurveda, I know there's certain types of exercise that are good for certain constitutions and certain times of your life, because as you go through your life, your hormones change. So we only have two or three minutes left in the program, but I wanted you to just summarize a little bit about the book, and of course tell people where to get the book and about your website.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the book, the first part tries to illuminate hormones, combining that focal fish idea with the context, combining the lists with the context, and really making it really making hormones understandable and practical, and illuminate why they're important. And then part two is about women's health, not only menopause, but menstruation problems, fertility problems, fibroids, a lot of the common things that we have, and part three looks at these questions of exercise and relationship and diet, and what kind of, from a basic point of view, what's likely to be, what's the foundational principles here, and how can we apply them, you can get the book from all the usual suspects. It's great to support your local bookstore and go in there and say, hey, could you please order this book and have it here? It's good for the book, and it's great for the local bookstore, and it's good for you. And but you can also get it from my website, which is www.drclaudiawelch.com. So that's Dr. Claudia Welch, W-E-L-C-H, like the grape juice.
Like the grape juice.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we just touched the surface of your book, so we'll have you on again to do more in-depth discussion about this very interesting lifelong pursuit. So, thanks for your input. We really appreciated it.
Really nice to talk with you, Dr. Z, and to everybody who's listening.
Great, thanks a lot.
All right.
Again, we just finished with Claudia Welch, author of Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life. This is Dr. Eugene Zamperone for the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z program, wishing you the best. Stay healthy.